I'm Dan Eastman, and today is Thursday, January 25th, 2024. It's full moon today, if that means anything. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Eastman Financial Report, and thank you for watching us here on WVW-TV. We really appreciate your viewership, and as you know, we are not a commercial television network. We don't sell commercial ads, and therefore we're not beholden to commercial advertisers. The information and the opinions and the facts and the data that we present to the public and the great marketplace of ideas is generated from the content of our programming, and it's not dictated or subject to the manipulations of any commercial advertising. The sad thing is these networks don't happen for free, and it costs a lot of money to be able to put these types of programs on the air, and that's why we appreciate all of the people, generous donors, viewers such as yourself and donors, who contribute to keep our efforts, our ministry, and our information flowing. If you're interested in making a donation to help out, you can go to the WVW-TV Foundation. It's WVWFoundation.com, and you can make a donation and help defer the cost of the overhead of keeping this programs on the air. And we also have corporate sponsors, of course. It's not just the individual donors. And the corporate sponsor for my program that helps WVW-TV continue to allow me to broadcast is Swiss America Trading, which is an American company based in Tucson, Arizona. And they make a market in precious metals. So if you're thinking of buying some precious metals to add to your portfolio or to perhaps shield yourself from the ravages of inflation, or maybe as a gift, or maybe as just a thing to own, you might want to give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271 and ask them for some free information on the sector. They'll be happy to send you some information and explain in more detail how the precious metals markets work. You can tell them Dan Eastman sent you from the Eastman Financial Report. They'll be happy to hear from you. You can also go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and you can shop around and see what they have to offer, check out their specials. And if you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, they'll be happy to send you the same free information that explains how precious metals, how they work. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. We look at precious metals as an inflation hedge because historically, over time, for the last 6,000 years, gold and silver have been precious to all societies who have existed at any, at any size and capacity at all. And one of the nice things about precious metals is that they last a very, very long time. And if you were inclined to give someone like a gift of precious metals, maybe a birthday gift or a graduation, graduations are coming up in spring, it's not only a thing of value, but it's also a way to instruct and perhaps teach the importance of the existence of hard money in the system. You know, a gold coin is an important thing. And of course, if you're interested in purchasing such a thing, you'll want to deal with a vendor that has experience in the industry. And when you look at Swiss America, this is what they do. This is their day job, as I say. And the professionals in the space, and they know all about the industry. They know the size, the quantity, the quality, and the market, the deliverable time, and all sorts of intricacies. When you're dealing and purchasing precious metals, you want to deal with professional people. I mean, you can go on the internet and you can buy it, online, or you can go to a big box store. But when you're really thinking about parting with your dollars, you want to know that you're getting what you're paying for. And that's why a 1 ounce gold coin should weigh an ounce and have an ounce of gold in that coin. And then people like Swiss America will be more than happy to explain the quality, the quantity, and how all that works. So anyway, give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to the website, Swiss America Trading, and use the promo code Eastman, and they will be happy to share lots of great information with you. Well, let's jump into the news. And I'm sorry, I'm going casual again. I took a sampling of my viewers, and should I wear a tie or not wear a tie? And it's split evenly, so I guess it's half the time I'll wear a tie and half the time I won't. But anyway, today is Thursday, and class, what happens on Thursday? Yes, it's Unemployment Thursday, and we're going to look at the unemployment numbers as reported by the federal government. Of course, today's numbers, not surprisingly, the new applications for unemployment are up rather substantially today. It was up from a revised 189,000 to the newly reported number, 214,000. And if you remember, you know, there's always revisions to these numbers. That's why when I say 214,000, by next Thursday, there will be revised. Okay. And they can't get it right the first time. They got to go back and revise it. But the point is, and this is not completely unexpected, you're seeing more people applying for first time unemployment, and you'd expect to see that after the holidays, because as I've mentioned, people are busy celebrating the holidays. And even if you've lost your job, you're probably more focused on maybe enjoying the last couple of weeks of the year. And sometimes the unemployment office, they may have reduced hours. So people tend to not go down to the unemployment office during the last 2 weeks of December, unless they really have to. And then the first week in January, things start to, you know, pick up a little. And by the middle or the end of January, people are realizing that if they don't have a job, they're going to need some support going into the next year. And that's why we always tend to see a blip in these numbers of first-time unemployment claims happening in that second and third week of January. Not unusual. I don't think 214,000, well, you keep all of them in your prayers, because these are people obviously needing financial assistance to the point where they'll get up off the couch and go to the unemployment office. That's not a good thing. And we would prefer everybody who wants a job can have a job. And when you apply for unemployment, that's sort of a last gasp. And nobody's getting rich on unemployment. It's just enough to give you some pocket money to buy some food until you can find that job. And that sometimes that job search takes a long time. If we look at the continuing numbers, which there's always two numbers on unemployment Thursday, the first is new claims and the second is continuing. What we see here today is that the continuing unemployment has actually gone up to 1.833 million people. So 1.8 plus million people are now currently enrolled in unemployment and receiving some sort of check. And what it tells you is, let's say there's a two-year window in your state, and after 2 years of collecting benefits, you fall off the end because they really want you to get out and find a job. What this tells you is that across the country, there are more people on continuing unemployment at this time. And what you really like to see is that number shrinking, but we're seeing it expanding. So in essence, 1.8 million plus people in the U.S. are on unemployment. Most states have a requirement that if you're on unemployment, you have to be actively looking for a job, circulating a resume, or filling out an application. But it tells you there's still 2 million people, 1.8 million people in the system who are sitting in a position that they probably wish they weren't in. So we'll keep them in our prayers. But it's an interesting thing because every Thursday we look and we see where the unemployment is going. Now, from the political perspective, and of course, this is not a political show. We're a financial show, an economics thinking show. But when you enter into a presidential election year, first of all, the federal government puts these numbers out, and that's controlled by the administration. And secondly, you can expect to see some volatility. But from the perspective of the incumbent administration, they don't want to see a big increase in unemployment as you're heading into the election year. What they'd like to see is declining unemployment, and you know, the roses are blooming and the birds are chirping and everything is good. So we'll watch that number. It's an interesting problem because the government agencies tend to adjust these numbers. And of course, some of the allegations floating around is that there's a little bit of political sauce mixed into that, which is problematic because when you're an academic, an economist or a financial person, one of the really important things in your research is the quality of data. You really want to use good data because it's the old adage, you know, garbage in, garbage out. If you use bad data in your formulas and your calculations, you come up with an economic theory and then you write a formula and you plug in data, there's a presumption that the data that you're plugging in is accurate. Now, there's always subject to some revision somewhere. But at the end of the day, when you're thinking about the economy professionally, you are really hoping that the data is accurate or as accurate as can be. When you start to factor in the political risk of manipulated data for purposes of influencing election cycles, then not only is the data suspect, but your economic model becomes suspect because you're getting bad data in and bad data out. Now, in advanced statistical analysis, there are ways to correct for that. But at the end of the day, when we have a government that is spending such vast amounts of money, I think the least we could expect is to see the best possible numbers that are not biased by political outcome. And I think that's something that I'm seeing more and more of that in the financial press, and wondering, you know, why in the world are we seeing these revisions? And they've always revised numbers. But if you put out a headline number and that's the headline, then and they revise it later, then historically, if you're analyzing historical data, the numbers, historic numbers may be more solid, but there was a headline value in putting out either a bigger, higher number or a lower number, depending on which metric. So we worry about that, and we think about that from the perspective of, the science of economics, and this perhaps the science, if not the art of finance, is that none of this works really well if the data is garbage. So it's really important to have accurate numbers. So, okay, I want to move on. There's another interesting story today that I want to sort of break this down, because it has to do once again with our housing numbers. And if you watch the show regularly, you know, housing's up, housing is down, starts are up, starts are down. And I explained that the housing industry is very, very important to our national economy, because it's a lot of money. It's land, it's development, it's building materials, it's labor, and these are, you know, trade association type, you know, levels of compensation. And the housing numbers matter a lot. And when you're analyzing the numbers, gross domestic product, and how big is the economy doing well? Well, you can look at unemployment numbers, and that's what we were just talking about, you know, the unemployment claims, what is the unemployment rate in the United States? And then you'll also take a look at, you know, how much money is in the system, the velocity of money. But housing is a big chunk of that. And manufacturing used to be a big chunk of that as well. But as we know, the United States has long ago shifted to a service-based economy, where manufacturing, while still very important to our economic base, isn't quite the driver that the housing market is. So when housing numbers come out, they're very important. And if you're going to be in the business of predicting economic activity in the future, then housing numbers matter. And that's why I'm going to talk about the numbers that came out today. And there's nothing wrong with these numbers. I mean, these are just numbers that were put out. And but I want to talk about there's sort of an inconsistency in these reports. And of course, the number I'm talking about is the new home sales are up 4% in 2023. Now, we were talking all last year about how home sales have cratered, okay, because the interest rates are up, there's not enough supply in the pipeline, and at the end of the day, nobody's selling their house, and the few people that do, they get a great big price for it. And then we see new home sales is up 4%. And we also talked earlier this week about existing home sales have hit a record low. And that's kind of an interesting thing, because you've got new home sales up and existing home sales are at an all-time historic low, I guess from 1995 on. And then you think, well, what does that mean? So if you're just listening to these news stories, new home sales are up in 2023. Oh, that's good. Yay, let's vote for the incumbent. Oh, existing home sales are the lowest they've been since 1995. Oh, vote for the challenger. You can't get into that zone. You have to look at these numbers for what they are. And what this tells me is, when existing home sales are low, as low as they've been since 1995, what it tells you is, from a supply and demand perspective, a classic economic perspective, that the supply of existing homes is low. And of course, the quantity demanded is high. People still want to buy homes, which means that the price is higher than it would be in a clearing market. Okay, or at least that's where the market is clearing at that supply of homes. So that sends a market signal or a pricing signal into the housing industry. And of course, there are companies that develop lots and lots of homes. I mean, there are big home developers that will buy thousands of acres and they'll put in the infrastructure and build thousands of homes all at once. And even the smaller home builders, if you're whatever your annual build rate is, let's say you build 50 homes a year or 5 homes a year or 100 homes a year or thousands of homes a year, when you're in the housing business and your business is taking a piece of land and putting in a foundation and building a house and then selling it for a profit, you are capitalized and you have a labor base and you have a capital base. And if the sales of homes is continuing to decline, your revenues decline, that's your business. And you don't want that to happen because you've got overhead expenses, you've got capital expenses like equipment and trucks and tools and all sorts of things. And of course you have a labor base that works for you, your labor force. And there's a real shortage of people in the United States who know how to build homes. I mean, you know, actually pound in the nails and put in the screws and run the pipes and the wires. That is an area. If you have skills in that area, you will not be showing up on the unemployment, first-time unemployment list. You will be very, very busy building. So if you're a business that builds homes, you can't be in a position where your revenue dries up because interest rates went up and you're not selling houses because your people will be laid off and they will go elsewhere. And at the same time, you still have to pay your rent and your overhead and you've got equipment, excuse me. And you know, the cost of that equipment is probably being paid for over time, whether it's leased or at least if you purchased it and amortize it over time, or you lease it and make your monthly payments, you have burn rate. And as a house builder, you can't afford to lose your revenues. So what do? Well, you analyze the market and you say, why are we not selling houses? And you know, the simple answer, because if you watch the mainstream media, is that, well, the interest rates are up and people can't afford to buy houses. So what do? Well, you have a margin, a gross margin in your building business that obviously, you know, provides you with a living and perhaps a profit. And what you do is you take some of that margin and you buy down the interest rates so that if you're building a brand new house and you offer it for sale in a market, and let's say the interest rates are 8%, but you can offer a brand new house with 30-year financing at 5%, you're going to continue to sell houses because the people that are out there, they're looking at the existing homes, the prices are sky high, there aren't too many to look at, and the interest rates are 8%, 7.5%, whatever they were. And then you look at a brand new home and you think, well, I get a brand new home and a 5% mortgage, and why I'm going to do it, because you get a brand new home instead of an existing home. So there's a lot less maintenance. There's a lot less, you know, fix the roof and all that stuff. It's all brand new. It's probably a warranty. Get a brand new home warranty for a year. So at the end of the day, that's why we're seeing that new home sales are up. They're up. They're up 4%, because the builders who are in that space have got to buy down the rate. Now, how does a buy down work? Well, it's a little bit of a complicated thing, but the housing mortgage market is very sophisticated. It's very rarefied, and there are all sorts of vehicles in place. They're Wall Street-y kind of vehicles that will allow for the mortgage note to be syndicated into a bundle and sold to big investors like pension funds and mutual funds and things like that. And the clever Wall Street types, who are very good at inventing new financial instruments, have figured out that if the builder puts in some money along with the buyer, you know, the buyer is going to take the mortgage. But if the builder pays a fee, that fee can effectively reduce the interest rate on that mortgage over time, because it's prepaid interest that gets bundled in, and the ultimate buyers of those mortgages or units in those bundle of mortgages will have effectively an 8% or 7.5% return, even though the homeowner has effectively only paying 5%. And you're effectively subsidizing the structuring of the mortgage. So that's how these things work. So the homeowner, you buy a brand new house at 5% mortgage, and boy, you're feeling pretty good because you have a brand new house. And while everybody's running around looking at the existing homes that are few to look at, and the ones that are coming on the market are expensive, you get yourself a brand new house. And that's why you're seeing this dichotomy in new home sales are up 4%. At the same time, existing home sales are down. And it's because the seller of the new home, unlike the seller of an existing home, you don't have the ability to buy down a mortgage. Now, in essence, there may be products where you could do that if you were so inclined, but that's a sophisticated financial structure that somebody just selling their home to somebody else and moving on probably aren't desperate enough to have to do that because there's still a big demand for existing homes. And that's why what you're seeing is this is an institutional play. And that's why it's quite consistent in seeing that that existing home sales are, tanking. But at the same time, excuse me, the new home sales are going up. I apologize. I'm still struggling from that cold I had 2 weeks ago. And our weather is certainly, I'm looking out our window today, and it's still very snowy and foggy. And welcome to winter in Wisconsin. Okay, I would like to move on. The median new home prices interestingly dropped to 413,000 year over year for 2023, but the median of all homes is 436,000. So you can see in that number as well that new home prices are down substantially, and that's reflecting that subsidy, that interest subsidy or buyout. Because you could do the same thing with reducing the price of the home, and if somebody's taking out the same 7.5% mortgage, what would it be to bring the mortgage payment to the equivalent of let's say it's a 5% mortgage? How much less mortgage note do you need to finance? And that's a second way of doing it, because mortgages are always inverse, like bonds. They effectively are that, the higher the interest rate, the face value, it's an inverse relationship, and you can structure your payments accordingly. Okay, I want to move on to the next big hot item here. The gross domestic product for Q4 of 2023, that means, excuse me, October, November, and December of the year 2023 is Q4, was up 3.3%. And everybody on Wall Street was sort of expecting it to be up, if at all, about 2.5%. But we get this big surge in Q4 number to 3.3% when everybody's expecting it down. And interestingly, Q3 GDP number was revised downward. It originally had come out at 5.2%, if you remember back a couple of months ago. Well, now they revised it down to 4.9. That's another example of a screaming headline. The economy's growing at 5.2%, and the reality is now they've adjusted it down to 4.9. That's sort of splitting hairs. But at the end of the day, this is put out by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, and they're the folks who calculate the size of this GDP. And of course, we want our GDP, gross domestic product, to grow. And what they're saying is, in third quarter it grew, but not quite as much. And then fourth quarter, still growing, and unemployment is down and the economy's growing. But again, these numbers are put out by the administration. And the hope is that these are accurate numbers and they're not being generated to effectively persuade voters that the economy is somewhere where it's not. And I think that's always the risk of government-generated numbers. And that goes back to my discussion about when you talk about public goods, why is the government in the business of cranking these numbers out at all? It's because there really isn't a market. Nobody's interested in paying for this data on a private basis, although there are good private data companies that do a very good job of analyzing data, probably better than the government data. But at the end of the day, it's another example of tax and spend and spending on a public good. And of course, if you're the administration and you control it's the president and the cabinet secretaries and the department of this, department of that, department of this. And if you're interested in keeping your job, you want everything to look good. And then the question becomes, it's just how reliable are these numbers? And that's the question being asked in the media today. When you see gross domestic product, that number for the last 3 months of 2023, when everyone's expecting a pretty flat number, to suddenly have a nice happy number. And then the question is, when Q1 of 2024 comes out, that'll be sometime in April, January, February, March, and then sometime in April, the number will come out. We'll see if they revise this number. So maybe we'll put a little footnote on this and just see what happens, because we will be well into into campaign season by then. And I think, you know, it's kind of an interesting phenomenon. One of the reasons why that's suspect is there's another story out today about the Chicago Fed does its national activity index. And if you remember, the Federal Reserve is broken into 12 regions, and each region has a Federal Reserve Bank, and there's a president of that Federal Reserve Bank. But that Federal Reserve Bank does a number of things on the analytical side. Of course, they are the ones responsible for shoveling money in the back door of a failing bank so the tellers can shovel it off the front door and stop the Jimmy Stewart bank run. But in addition to this lender of last resort component, the Federal Reserve Bank has a staff of people, and they do a lot of analysis. And one of the reasons they do that analysis is because when the Federal Open Market Committee meets, and of course ours is meeting, the committee will meet next week on the 31st to decide what to do with the interest rates. Well, a big part of that discussion is based upon the regional analysis by each of the 12 Federal Reserve banks. And, you know, some look more specifically at one issue and some at the other, but their job generally is to think about, observe, and report out what is happening in your region. And of course, the Chicago Federal Reserve is important to us here in Wisconsin because that's our Federal Reserve Bank, you see. And we tend to be linked into the greater Chicago market, whereas the Minnesota crowd, they've got their own Fed up there. And that's a different region out in the Great Plains. So the point that I'm making here is that this Federal National Activity Index was down in December. And that's 8 out of 12 months reporting that it's a negative number down. And then it's okay. So then we just talked about how the GDP comes out with this big surprise, you know, 3.3% growth. We have the Federal Reserve Bank in Chicago. And keep in mind, Chicago and Wisconsin and Indiana, these are manufacturing and agriculture places. And there's a lot of intense stuff that's made with heavy equipment and machines and workers. You know, this is a kind of a heavier industry part of the United States. Used to call us the Rust Belt, although it's kind of an old-fashioned name at this point. But at the end of the day, when we look at other Federal Reserve banks, and I made a little bit of a list, we had the Philly Reserve, the Philly Fed, we had the New York Fed, which is New York and New Jersey, the Atlanta Fed, the Dallas Fed, and now the Chicago Fed, all saying over the last 6 months that, you know, the economy is not doing well. It's in contraction. So if you've got all these Federal Reserve banks saying, you know, the economy is really kind of slow. It's not crashing. It's not booming. It's declining. It's declining slowly. Then how do you get to a GDP in fourth quarter that's up 3.3% and everybody's happy? And this, you know, the third quarter was up either 4.9 or 5.2, wherever they adjusted to. So that really raises a question to me. How is it that all these Federal Reserve banks are putting out these numbers that we're starting to, that we see this big burst in GDP? It seems inconsistent. But what this does tell you, with all these Federal Reserve banks reporting lackluster or slow or declining economies, is when they meet next week, the idea is if the economy is slowing down, what does the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee do? Well, it pushes the punch bowl closer to the edge of the table. People get a little more punch. The party picks up and the economy grows, right? So if the Fed banks are telling the Federal Open Market Committee that they're seeing a soft, lackluster economy, that suggests to Fed watchers, and this is sort of like, you know, people who you know, is armchair quarterbacking, but it suggests that the Fed will not be in a position to raise interest rates if the economy is sluggish. The question we're at, and we've been holding for the last couple of Open Market Committee cycles, is will they cut the rates? There was supposed to be a rate cut in March. Of course, that was sort of signaled out by Chairman Powell. And then all sorts of Fed presidents sort of backtracked from that statement. Well, you know, we may not be doing that. We'll see. But what this tells me is, as they're reporting a slower economy in multiple regions across the United States, that there may be a rate cut, a small rate cut in the planning, and this is the groundwork they have to lay so they don't look like they're random and capricious and arbitrary. And we'll see what happens. I mean, you can never predict the Federal Reserve. My sense is they're either going to keep it stable, like the president of the Atlanta Federal Reserve suggested, or maybe there's going to be a push saying, you know what, the economy is slowing. We don't want the economy slowing going into an election year. Therefore, we better cut the rates. That'll blow a little life into the market. It will certainly have a dramatic impact on the housing market, because any significant rate cut, a 0.25% rate cut, is factored in very quickly into mortgage rates, and that will put lower pressure onto the mortgage rates. So it'll be lower at the time of year in the spring season when real estate markets pick up all over the country. That's the biggest selling time, is spring into summer. Everybody wants to sell in spring and summer and buy a new place and be settled in before school starts and all the, you know, winter blows in and all that. So we'll watch and see, but this is kind of what these numbers are showing today, and we'll keep an eye on it over the week. Anyway, thanks so much for tuning in. Appreciate your viewership. Appreciate you watching WVW TV, and look forward to talking with you again tomorrow. Have a great afternoon. Bye.